All right. Hey, welcome back. This is the I'm Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. May 11, 2026, Monday. Beautiful day here on the east side of the country. I hope it's great wherever you're at. It is raining a bit this morning, which is well needed. I wouldn't say it's raining enough, but it's raining. And it's nice. It's set a nice tone for the morning. And I've been out doing a few errands. My son and I started doing a kettlebell workout. Oh, freaking Instagram, man. But it's actually pretty cool. And I've been wanting to do it. I've been intimidated by the kettlebell workout because everyone that seems to be doing them is ripped and in great shape. And I am not. I mean, I'm in decent shape, but I don't look like those guys. And so, whoops. And, but I've been wanting to do it. I've been researching it. You know, Instagram is good, bad, I don't know. But if you want to find something like a kettlebell workout, there are so many. And so I've been downloading kettlebell workouts and different things. And I've been telling my son, we're going to do kettlebell workout. And he's like, oh, right, whatever. And so yesterday we did it. And it was great, and we had a lot of fun. We did it together, and we took some videos so that we could hopefully see that, you know, in a few weeks or a month or whatever, we are improving. But it was a great workout, and so I got up this morning. You know, of course, like everything, you know, when I find something that I think is cool, everybody needs to do it, right? This is the life-saving event, and everyone needs to do the kettlebell workout, and so I'm trying to get my wife to do it, and she's like, I ain't doing that. I'm like, come on, trying to get my daughter. I'm not doing that thing. And my buddy Ben, who I finally borrowed the kettlebell from, because crazy enough, if you try to buy kettlebells, they're expensive. I don't know where they're made or where they're coming from, but they're roughly, you know, $75 to $100 a piece. And I was like, I'm not doing that. And so I bummed a kettlebell from my buddy, a 25-pound one. And of course, I'm like, I don't know if that's going to be heavy enough. It was heavy enough. And he finally brought it over to me. And so my son and I, we did a kettlebell workout last night. And it was really cool. I really enjoyed the workout. It took us about a half an hour, I guess. We did it together, which I really liked. And so this morning, I'm trying to talk my daughter and wife into it. They're like, we're not doing it. So I'm like, if I could just find, you know, a smaller kettlebell. So my buddy Ben's like, they sell them at Marshall's. I'm like, Marshall's? And he's like, yeah, they're like 10 bucks. I'm like, seriously? So I go to Marshall's this morning, and Marshall's, I'm sure everyone's familiar with Marshall's. It's, you know, I don't know what it is. They just sell like a lot of clothes. It's not knockoff stuff, but it's all, you know, you might find one pair of pants you like, right? So anyway, I walk into Marshall's and I grab a cart and I'm like, I'll just figure it out, right? And so I'm starting to walk back and I said, well, let me ask this lady. I'm like, where do you sell exercise equipment? And she's like, yeah, right there in the corner. And I was going to search this whole freaking store. And luckily I was like 10 feet away and I walked over there and they had kettlebells. And I bought these two little pink kettlebells that were 5 pounds. They're freaking adorable. And then I bought a 15 and a 20. And for the four of them, I think I paid $55, which is not bad.
Remain seated, please. Permanecer sentados, por favor.
Once was a magical place, over time it was lost. First increased the cost, now the fortune of the kingdom is locked up in its dungeon vault. The castle full of some traps, recorded by a setback, decoyed by OGs. Now the drawbridge has been lifted, as the millions they drop to their knees. They pay homage. Going closes, it snows on those about to get in, on heads that are small.
Tragic Kingdom, No Doubt. Shout out to No Doubt. Killing it in Las Vegas. I don't know if anybody's seen the clips of them doing their residency at the Sphere in Las Vegas, but man, what a phenomenal show. I watched some of the clips. Still doing an amazing job. Gwen Stefani's awesome. I don't know. I like Gwen Stefani. She's cool. Really good show. I would love to get to Las Vegas and see any of these bands that are playing at the Sphere, but I just do not have the opportunity right now. But man, looks great. Congratulations to them. But yeah, I thought I would come upstairs, see if we can chat about something. I have, I don't know, it seems to be a lot of inventory kind of thinking for me lately. We have, you know, I've been working with a couple guys. We've been working through the fourth and the fifth. I lost one guy, which is fine. But it just is, and now, of course, we started doing the Drop the Rock meeting, which is a book on the 6th and 7th, and there's just so much stuff going on when it comes to inventory. I just thought maybe I should come up and chat about it. I started a meeting, we started a meeting. I didn't start anything. The guys I sat around with, we had a group conscience, right? And we decided we wanted to start reading Drop the Rock. If you're in recovery, and whether you are, 50 years, 1 year, 1 month, well, actually, you probably want to at least be at the 6th and 7th. God damn, my freaking people keep calling me. If you should probably be at least at the 6th and 7th or at the 4th and 5th. But the 6th and 7th, it's about character defects. And if you haven't read that book, it's a great book. I would imagine most people have, but if you haven't, order it. I don't know how much, $10 or something. It is a great book, and it's so helpful. At least it was for me, and still continues to be. And that story in the very beginning about Mary, that story I think about all the time. I've referred to that story in this podcast about how Mary is trying to get to the boat with all the people headed to Serenity Island, and she's swimming, but she's drowning because she has a bunch of rocks tied around her neck. And obviously the rocks refer to character defects. And, you can't find serenity if you can't let go and identify the character defects. You will drown and die. And it's a little extreme, I know, but that's sort of the story. And she does let go, and she does make it. And I've ridden the boat to Serenity Island. I don't know when after I had been sober for a while and picked up a drink, because I always say, you go to Serenity Island with a group, right? It's a group of people all doing the same thing, but you don't leave Serenity Island in a group. When I left Serenity Island, I swam back by myself. But, the funny thing is, back in those days, I don't really know if I even had any idea what Serenity was. I was just not drinking. And, it's nice that the steps give us a nice plan. They lay it all perfectly out. But, there's sometimes that we're just not completely honest. And for whatever reason, and it may, clearly there's these things that we've done in our past that are just unspeakable. But sometimes it isn't even those things, right? It's just this other's behavior that we get away with, right? Because, the litmus test is how do you behave in the hour that you're at a meeting, but it's the other 23 hours of our behavior that can really, get us in a pickle. And so, but I just thought I wanted to read. I found this reading because it's only a couple pages away from the reading I was trying to do. Let's see here. And this is called 261, and it's Fearless Searching. It says, my self-analysis has frequently been faulty. Sometimes I've failed to share my defects with the right people. At other times, I've confessed their defects rather than my own. And at still other times, my confession of defects has been more in the nature of loud complaints about my circumstances and my problems. When AA suggests a fearless moral inventory, it must seem to every newcomer that more is being asked of him that he can do. Every time he tries to look within himself, pride says, you need not pass this way, and fear says, you dare not look. But pride and fear of this sort turn out to be body boogeymen, nothing else. Once we have a complete willingness to take inventory and exert ourselves to do the job thoroughly, a wonderful light falls upon this foggy scene. As we persist, a brand new kind of confidence is born, and the sense of relief at finally facing ourselves is indescribable. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so true. You know, I've shared before, and I've heard many people share that, you know, they've come into this program, they put down the drink, and they found AA to be very social. I know when I came in, I had zero social. And I remember, you know, and I've talked about, you know, making sure I took a shower before going to the meeting, right? It was really had become the most important thing for the recovery, but also for the social. You know, I, at the end of my drinking, I was drinking by myself. I had no friends. I only sort of hung out with people that sort of drank like me, and there wasn't very many. So I spent a lot of my time alone. And of course, a person like that sits around thinking of all the wonderful things I was going to do one day and all of the wonderful things that I had done in the past, but I could not find anything that I was doing at the current time that was wonderful at all. And so when I was able to, you know, show up to a social event with people that were sober doing the same thing, I loved it. And I was like, you know, we got to do the steps. I'm like, yeah, let's do the steps. But look at this. This is fun. You know, I'm making friends. You know, I'm walking through grocery stores, waving to people. Right? I wasn't waving to anybody when I came into this program. I had no friends. I was a pain in the ass. And so to start having a social group of friends and, you know, being recognized in the community just really felt good. And of course, yeah, we're going to do the steps. And you know, I was like, you know, obviously the first one, admit we're powerless over alcohol, their lives have become unmanageable. I mean, I'm here, right? So that, I've done that one and, you know, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I don't know. And then we start doing the third step. But I'm sitting here thinking, well, listen, I'm not drinking. And I'm not drinking and driving. And so I'm fixing a lot of the problems. You know, and I went to the meeting on... I guess it was on Friday, and, you know, people talk about, you know, love being sober, but, you know, I'll say it, you know, sobriety does not keep us sober. Sobriety will not keep us sober forever, right? Sobriety, the definition of sobriety is to be free of drink, and it is important. It's actually required. I mean, I don't think you can find serenity drinking. But sobriety will not keep us sober, and that's what I did early on in this program. I stayed sober, not doing the steps, you know, and still having my behavior and all of the dumb little things that I was doing, but I was staying sober. And then all that got exposed, obviously, moving to Easton. And, you know, so when I came back and addressed this step, because this is really about the sixth and seventh, I mean, the moral inventory, but the sixth and seventh step are, you know, character defects, you know, made a list of, oh, what is it? Let me read it. So it's humbly asked him to remove all of our character defects. I think that's seven. Six. Yeah. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And then seven, humbly asked him. Oh, I don't want to read it right. I want to read it correctly. It says, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. But the sixth one, you know, this is where I talk about it all the time. The words, you know, I've been frustrated at people that overanalyze some of these words and steps and sentences and all this stuff. But, you know, the words are really important, especially in this step. You know, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. You know, coming into the program and having no relationship with God, I was not only wanting God to remove all these defects of character, I was ready to try to have this relationship with God that I've been trying to, that I've been chasing my whole life, and still thinking that God is, you know, like Super Google or, you know, Santa, where I can just say, God, please, now, finally, we have this relationship. Now, can you send me some money? Or can you fix my car? Or whatever it is. And going through what I've gone through, coming back in, where I'm at today, you know, what my, for me, my definition of God is just peace, love, and free of fear. And the only thing that creates fear in my life are character defects. I mean, honestly, you know, if I have a tendency to do this and it's not good and I do it, usually I become fearful of it. Like, am I going to get caught? Who knows about this? Is someone going to tell? It just creates fear. And so when it says we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, I look at it more like I'm entirely ready to have peace, love, and free of fear remove all these defects of character, meaning that, and I think I talked about this the other day, you know, the first step is when we come in because our lives have become unmanageable to everybody else. And the 10th step is the step where our life becomes unmanageable to us. Like, I get sick of it. You know, clearly everybody else was sick of my behavior and the things that I was doing and, you know, how it was affecting them. But now, you know, at this point, the 10th step, you know, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it, right? And then don't do it again. This is where I start to become sick of my own shit. I become, first of all, I become aware of how much fear I live in, right? And two, I start to become like aware of, like, if I don't do this, I won't be afraid, right? Flirting on the internet, right? That's that, to me, that's the big one. You know, I try to do the best I can, and I don't do it anymore. But there is in the past, I might have hearted a picture, and then I'm like, oh, my God. You know, there's a friend of mine who is in recovery. She's a pretty girl, and she's on Instagram, and she friended me, and I accepted. But I will not like any of her pictures. I feel bad because, you know, there is like, she'll post something, and no one said anything, or no one's liked anything. And I'm like, well, I'm not liking it. Because I don't, you know, I have this fear. Like, if I like it, someone's going to think, oh, you must like her. And I don't. But I also know better. Like, I can't, you know, I wish I could change what people think, but I can't. So all I can do is adjust how I behave so that I can avoid all that. Right. And, you know, but I've learned, you know, 10 years ago, I may have liked the picture. And then I may have had to have a conversation. Why'd you like that picture? And I'm like, I don't know. And maybe got defensive or pissed or I don't know. But today I'm like, no need, because I don't want to worry about that. And because I want peace, love, and free of fear. I don't want to worry and be stressed out about my actions today. And, you know, and that's what it's about, right? Those Joe and Charlie tapes, you know, we came to believe, turned our will, our thinking, and our lives, actions over to a God of our understanding. Right? And that's where I started to learn, right? If I make better choices, it reflects in my life. And when it reflects in my life, I live a life that has less fear. Will it ever have no fear? I don't think so. But less fear, a lot less fear, is better, right? And that's where I started to find peace. You know, there's nothing better than going through a day and not worrying about, you know, there's obviously you got to show up for work and you got to do everything you got to do. But it's nice when you don't have to worry about something that you have said or done. Right. It's really peaceful. I'd become used to living in this world of fear and worry that it'd become my way of life. And, you know, I spoke with a guy the other day, and we talked about this, and he was like, I never thought about it like this. This is blowing my mind, right? And then I saw him at a meeting the other day, and he's like, dude, I'm just having the most peaceful time right now. And, you know, he's having this sort of awakening, right? Oh, my God. Because understanding a God of my understanding, I'm still, you know, in steps 1 and 2, I still think that God's like Santa. But when I start to learn in step 3 that if I just change my behavior, it reflects better in my life, I start to live in this place of peace. That's the beginning. And that's where I personally started to say, well, maybe that's what God is. Peace, right? And so I started to have a new understanding of what God was, at least for me. You know, to each his own. It doesn't matter. But I know for me, this has to be what recovery is about. Don't do bad things and live in a peaceful existence, period. Now, it's the bad things. That's trying to figure out what, you know, trying to figure out what all the bad things are is where it gets tough. And that's where we do the moral inventory. And like I was telling the guy, you know, the guys I've been working with, they're all, you know, smart, you know, doing well, you know, great families, pretty much full of common sense. But, you know, I have met people and worked with people that are completely clueless to the things that they do. Completely. And so it's nice to have a moral inventory when you start working through and start seeing, oh, okay. And then if you choose to continue to do it, you know, that's just, maybe we're not ready to get sober yet or get on that boat, right, to Serenity Island, because we can be sober. I can be sober without working these steps. And I see it happen a lot. And I also see there, you know, I can think of a couple guys that are still reluctant to believe that these steps do anything, but aren't willing to give up. And sort of going through the journey that I went through, which was, I'm not going to get real crazy about diving into this, but I'm going to just sort of live my life and just try to do the best I can and start to get little glimpses of it. And then when I start getting little glimpses of it, I start to understand it more and try to be better and better. And, you know, but, you know, there's always the voice that says, I'm never going to get rid of these character defects. That's what a guy said the other night at a meeting. He's like, I look at these, and I know a lot of people, they've gotten rid of the character defects, but I'm never going to be able to get rid of them all. And I'm thinking, that's just, you know, what's that, self-pity? I don't know. That's a character defect. It's a character defect to tell everybody that you're not going to be able to get rid of your character defects. You gotta want to try, right? Or there's just nobody holding us accountable, right? Like if I just was a single man that just lived in an apartment and really wasn't accountable to anybody, I don't know, maybe you could go off the rails. But, you know, I'm accountable to me, for one, to God, and then to my wife and to my kids. You know, I have an older son who's going to, he's in college. And, you know, he is in this kind of group where, you know, everything about our president is really bad. And he's got 100, you know, 100 points to prove that. And it makes me want to return back to my old behavior and tell him he's a fucking idiot, right? I want to snap out. But, you know, he is young and he's going through his journey. And I remember being his age and being the same way. It's very scary, and it's not fair. It's not fair. How come they have this and I can't have that? And how come we don't tax the? And it's just, you know, but it's just scary. And so I, you know, I told him I can't talk you into anything and I can't talk you out of anything. But what I can do, right, is try to be, I try to think it all the way through, because just because I don't agree with his position doesn't mean that I can't at least respect his position. And is it important that I'm right? The more he tells me I'm wrong, sometimes I say yes, but I just have to sort of take my beatings, you know, because my, you know, at my age, you know, and my, what I said to him was like, dude, you know, he's the president. So it is what it is. What is the solution moving forward, right? Like who, if you are really so upset about all this, who is going to, you know, come out of the woodwork and fix all the stuff, right? Who's your, and they, he and a lot of unfortunate people in that group, they only want to argue about Epstein files. They don't have any vision of the future. They don't have any vision of a policy that might help them. They just want to say everything is in the Epstein files, which, I don't know. Maybe it is. I don't know. But you could have used that. It feels like they would have used that in, like, September and October, you know, before the election. But no, I don't know. We live in a crazy world. Point is, I'm just like, all right, sounds good, man. And I said, regardless, I said, we just always got to keep talking. And, of course, I texted him yesterday, and he was like, we're going to the gym. Love you, Dad. And so we're good. But I also know, do I want to say something that actually isn't really going to change him or me? And then have this moment where I live in fear of, like, you know, have I upset my son? Have I, you know, because I think if I said or did something that was like that, it would be a bit out of my character. And, you know, I'm pretty good most of the time. There's only a few things that seem to kick me off of the reservation. And unfortunately, politics has turned into one of them. And I don't like that. And so I really, every day, I have to try and be very good and refrain from pen and tongue, right? And try to keep my mouth shut. And, you know, and because I don't want to, at the end of the day, go, oh, who have I pissed off? It's just not worth it, right? It's just not worth it. So, read, you know, I know when I sort of started getting into this, I did feel sort of lost. I didn't really know what to expect, so I don't know how lost I felt, but I definitely would think, am I doing enough in these steps? And in the back of my mind, I really knew I wasn't doing anything. So was I doing enough? Probably not. So, you know, if you're there, if you're, you know, even if you've done the sixth and seventh, even if you've done all 12, I think it never hurts to go back and read Drop the Rock. It is a great book, and yeah, go check it out. So, all right, let me do today's daily reflection. All right. A new sense of belonging. Until we had talked with complete candor of our conflicts and had listened to someone else do the same thing, we still didn't belong. 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, page 57. After 4 years in AA, I was able to discover the freedom from the burden of buried emotions that had caused me so much pain. With the help of AA and extra counseling, the pain was released and I felt a complete sense of belonging and peace. I also felt a joy and a love of God that I had never experienced before. I am in awe of the power of the fifth step. That's right. That's right. You know, the disease wants us to keep secrets. The disease doesn't want us to tell the truth. It wants us to keep secrets and live in fear. And, you know, that's just not fun. And, you know, these steps are here to help. So I think thanks for letting me share. I hope everyone has a great day, and we'll catch you later. Bye.